the video as well. Yeah, have a bit of monkey. I think it's that monkey's from Lancelot Link. Did you ever see Lancelot Link? Now, that's a good question to start the interview with.
What?
Okay, great. I'm glad I'm recording. So, what is Lancelot Link? Lancelot Link, now I would guess it's American, but I could be completely wrong. It could be made somewhere very strange and then dubbed into English. It was a
Right.
show which played when we were young. I don't know when it was made. I'm sure it was made in the 70s, 60s or 70s, but it was just monkeys, trained monkeys, that they filmed and then they dubbed their voices over the top and had some kind of narrative like a spy. Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp was the name of the show. I'm not making any of this up. I know it sounds like I've taken acid and I've come up with a great idea, but it's all true.
It does sound like a great idea. It sounds like something we had in England called the Animal Magic by
Right.
this pet botherer, pet fancier
Right. Right.
called Johnny Morris.
Oh.
And yeah, it was like a children's program, and he'd walk around various zoos and things, but he would narrate the animals in an overdub. So yes, you'd have a monkey saying, "Gawd blimey, governor, it is cold here, innit?" Although this was the 70s, I don't think the word "innit" had been invented then.
No, but oh no, Lancelot Link sounds way worse because these monkeys, these chimps were all dressed up and surely against their will, not like even in a zoo. They were filmed with sets, all kinds of things. God knows the behind the scenes. I have no idea.
Well, I think what I'm going to have to do offline
Yeah.
is go to the home of made up facts, Wikipedia, and search that bad boy out.
I think you can find it on YouTube without a doubt. I've shown it in class because I've mentioned like how culture, you want to look at how culture changes. There was a show where chimps were in a, and they're like, "What?" And I showed them and they literally got 20 seconds in before they're like, "Please turn this off."
Oh.
These chimps are suffering, I believe one student said. It was like pretty
Yeah.
much.
Well, we also, I mean, still on a chimpanzee tip.
Yep.
Over here in England, we had adverts in the 70s for a particular brand of tea, because that's all we drink in England, of course.
Yep.
Called PG Tips. And
Yes, I think that might have come over here too. Yes, they had
the
talking
oh,
monkeys, talking chimps.
I do apologize on behalf of 1970s racist English cunt. I'm sorry. I dropped the C bomb already. We haven't officially started yet. Jesus. Yeah, the adverts were chimps at tea parties pouring tea and things. And I think it got to about the mid 80s and people thought, no, it's not cool.
It is weird to think that there was a time
There certainly was.
with a lot of things that you know get that we look back on and go, how did that pass muster? But there was a time where no one even considered it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had a TV show also back in the days in the 70s when there was only three channels. It
Yep.
was called Love Thy Neighbor. And
Yes.
looking back on it now, it's like, oh my God, that is the most racist, politically incorrect, dodgy stuff ever.
Yeah, and it was basically they tried to sh was it I don't know. I mean it was on when I was very young here, but it was from memory it was we're all going to be horribly racist, but we all pull together in the end. Is that I don't even know if that was the message.
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, obviously the writers of the show didn't consider it racist at all.
No.
But looking back on it with hindsight, or as I like to call it, intelligence, you look at it and go, "Oh, fuck me, mate! No, you can't." We had one that was that had even worse racial stereotypes. It's called Mind Your Language,
Yeah.
and it involved an English tutor. A teacher with a class full of foreigners, or as we like to call them in England, bloody foreigners.
Yes, that's right.
And like with the German lady, she was butch with pigtails.
God.
The Indian gentleman had
Oh no.
look, it was just a fucking horror show.
Yeah.
So yeah, search it sometime if you want.
Well, I mean, this is like I'm pandering to people like Stu and Wigo and Rich, who, you know, are all about this stuff. But there was a show that we talked about a lot on our previous podcast, which was Hey Hey It's Saturday. And Hey Hey It's Saturday was this variety show that was on for years and years on a Saturday night. When you were a kid and there was nothing on, or a parent and there was nothing on Saturday night, everyone used to watch it. Like, it was very popular. And then it went, and then people grew out of it, and the person who hosted it never wanted it ever to go away. And he's still trying to bring it back, I think. Oops, but they did a reunion sort of show, I think the late, maybe 2008, 2009. And they did a reunion show where they, oh, we'll do redo all the best bits and we'll get the best acts. Yeah. And they used to do a like a gong show, basically, in the variety hour. And they brought back their most famous acts. And some of them were like Jackson 5 imitators in blackface. And this is 2008, 2009. And
holy shit. It's blacking up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a great moment in Australian culture, because I think it was Harry Connick Jr. was a guest judge, and he was like, what is this? This is offensive. Zero. You shouldn't be doing this. And everyone was like, oh, and it was kind of, you know, classic Emperor's New Clothes, where everyone was okay. And then there was like backlash against him, but he was racist once. That's what Australians like to do, is like, we're not racist, or not even that. They're like, that person called us a racist, and he's been racist before, so that discounts anything we ever do. It was, man, right. This is, yeah, like just over 10 years ago.
Jesus. Yeah, I'm not racist. I've got a black friend and I like curry.
Yeah, that's right. When it's not a racist country, we're certain of that. I don't know how we got here, but either way. I need to introduce you. I'm talking to Damien Dent. Hey, Damien.
Hello.
We haven't spoken on this podcast for, I believe it's 6 years. That's how
420 years
previous. Many years ago. Yeah. And obviously you are joining us from England. Are you still, I think last time we spoke, you were living in Surrey, is that correct?
Yes, good old Surrey, kind of south of London. I am still in the same place, spiritually not. But physically, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hello. You all right?
I'm all right. Yeah. It's good. It's very nice to hear your voice. I'm always a big fan of your voice. Now, it's going to get worse. I really wanted to start by surprising you with some compliments.
I don't do compliments.
So if you want to take your headphones off and I'll just talk to nothing, and then you can come back and we'll just carry on. First question I wanted to ask you today is, how seriously do you take your writing?
My writing? What? Yeah. Comedy, music, what?
I'll explain. So you make a number of podcasts, and I'm going to talk about a couple of them tonight. Today, in your time.
Okay.
But the one I wanted to talk to you, which is one that you don't do often, and you've spoken in the past just how difficult it is or how much time invested to make it, was The Bitter Sound.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right. And The Bitter Sound, I'm a big fan of. It's I don't know, some sketches, soundscapes. It can be a little disturbing.
Yep.
But some of the sketches you wrote, or the phrases you build, or the images. It's a lot of the time the images you create get stuck in my brain. Now, the last episode you did, I think, was last year. Was it like June or something like that? It was a while ago.
It was about a year ago, and it took me about 2-3 years to make.
Right. So, yeah, I want more. Can you do it weekly?
Not retain what little sanity I have left. There is a final show planned, but
great.
But that'll probably take another 2-3 years to do.
But you in it, you were there was a scene that you wrote a little sketch basically of a disheveled person waking up in their car, obviously from a bender the night before, and wandering about, and people being concerned about their appearance or mocking them and all of this other stuff. But some of the imagery you wrote in that has been stuck in my brain for over a year. Ooh. like simple imagery, which is a dog with a brick in its mouth, for example. I don't know why, but I can't get that image out of my head. And you've got a tendency to do that. You create these like images that maybe seem surrealist or, you know, might just be thrown together, but there's something unsettling about them as well.
Yeah, that's by design. The reference to a dog with a brick in its mouth actually came from a joke, a long drawn out joke that a friend of mine, not with us anymore, said over probably one of the last times I took acid.
Right.
And it's a very long rambling joke that ended with, and there was a dog with a brick in its mouth. And it didn't actually make any particular sense.
Right.
But I just shoehorned that in because it didn't belong there. So
no.
Yeah. No,
and the other image was like, I think there were birds and they popped like balloons. I don't know. You have this way of like, yeah, just, I don't know if it's a delivery as well, but it's this imagery. So that's what I was asking you about was the creation of the actual writing part of it. Is it stream of consciousness, or do you take a bit of time, or is it just, I'll just throw together random bits?
It's very much stream of consciousness. And then I'll write down about three pages and then I'll leave it for a while. And then I'll come back and sort of chop at it a little bit until I've got a few paragraphs. It's very much influenced by, I don't know if I mentioned it the last time we spoke, my memory's not so great. But there was a show on BBC Radio 1 years and years and years ago by the comedian, satirist, now filmmaker, Chris Morris.
Yeah.
It was a show called Blue Jam. And I took a lot of my cues from that. In fact, I started doing the bit of sound because I was pissed off that there was no more Blue Jams. I thought, well, I'm going to have a go myself.
Right. Well, maybe I'll start making my own bit of sounds, because if you're not going to make any more,
do it. There is definitely going to be there's definitely going to be one more.
Yeah.
And I'll see how I feel after that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how it works, isn't it? I mean, I wasn't doing many of these podcasts, and then for some reason this year, I can't stop doing them, and I don't really know why, but that's just seems how it goes.
Well, they are rather good.
Yeah, thank you. Yes,
keep it up.
I've got in a groove where I'll just keep doing them, and the more I do it, the more I enjoy it, which is not usual, I think, for activities that I've done in my life. I guess is the joy might drain out of it the more you do, or as soon as it becomes a job, you bail on it. But that hasn't happened this year, so that's been good.
Well, as I say in some of the TV and online gambling ads we have in England,
yes.
when the fun stops, stop.
Wow, powerful message. And then coming up next, more sport to gamble on. Like, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
I don't even think we have that. I think we have a little line at the bottom of the ad just saying, like, not even being spoken, but down the bottom, gambling is a problem for you. Call this number. Like, it's... yeah, not even an issue. Anyway, I don't really want to talk about the ills of gambling. I have many friends who enjoy a gamble. They're not very rich, eels. But, you know.
Did you say eels or evils?
Evils. Eels, right. Fine. The eels of gambling.
Eels.
I've come to talk to you about the eels of gambling tonight.
Gambling eels. You see, that could form a narrative in another bit of sound sketch.
That's right. You are free to use that.
Thank you very much.
All right. I wanted to ask you as well. It's quite a general question. It comes from our mutual friend Stu, and it's very
Stu Balls.
Yeah, that guy. I told him that I was talking to you tonight, and he said, "I really want to know what podcasting means to David, because you're very involved in podcasting community, and you, like you said, you've done the bit of sound. Strange Times is one you do with Kat Sorens that you've been doing for." How many years now? 8 years? 7 years?
About 8 years or something. Yeah. We started, I don't know, beginning of 2000 and 2013, late 2012. I don't know. It's all lost in the mists of time.
Yeah. Yes, it does happen that way. And so what is the... So what drew you to it, I guess? Because, you know...
Tramadol.
Tramadol. So you needed something to take the edge off? Is that what's happening?
Well, I... At the time, I mean, like, rewinding. I don't know if you've got a suitable sound effect for that. but by 2012, I was listening to a few podcasts and my band wasn't really doing much at the time. So I thought, well, hang on a minute. I've got all this studio stuff. I might as well have a go.
Yeah.
And that's when I started up Bittersound. And then I thought, oh, God, this is too much like hard work. Then I just started, like, doing what would, well, you call it a normal chat show podcast, you know, the old Strange Times.
Yeah.
We've had more co-hosts than Spinal Tap have had drummers.
have any of exploded or anything?
One did, but it's a matter of litigation, so I can't go into it.
Fair enough.
It's kind of evolved over the years. It's more like an hour's free therapy session for me every week.
Yes. I think that's what a lot of podcasting has that's certainly what we use it for. When we did What a Pair of Trousers, it was like, oh, this is just therapy. I don't really care who listens. And I found them again, like I said, the more I've done this year, the better I felt, certainly afterwards, talking to people and people I haven't spoken to in great detail, even talking to my brothers in a different environment, I guess. It's something very therapeutic about it.
It is, and something that it's actually probably since Dom has joined as a co-host. I mean, he's been with us for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. But we're sort of we introduced a while back, and we're kind of running with it a bit. We got some really good feedback. We, in amongst the drunken antics and me being in various different medicated states, mm-hmm. We like to discuss mental health, particularly male mental health.
Yeah.
It's a subject very close to my heart. So, yeah, we weave that in and out of the drunken shenanigans. And I've had people reach out to me. I won't name any names. They don't want to be named, but they've said that, yeah, you're a drunken, druggy buffoon sometimes. But we really appreciate talking about their mental health thing and getting it out there because, you know, men don't talk.
Yeah.
There's a website that I go to. I think it was actually founded in Australia, unless I'm very much mistaken. It's okaytosay.org. Dancing with the Black Dog. The Black Dog being the term that Sir Winston Churchill gave to his depression.
Right.
And it's all about, you know, hey, look, it's okay. You don't have to man up.
Yeah.
And I fucking hate that phrase anyway, man up. I'll fucking show you how to man up. blokes need to talk.
Yeah.
Because we lose too many of our brothers due to that Black Dog shit.
So do you think that I don't, you know, want to big note you too much, but do you think the way we can talk about mental health on a podcast is very different to how it's presented in media in general?
In media, do you mean sort of like news? Papers and radio and stuff, because I mean that's all going to be subject to agendas and censorship and guidelines and stuff, whereas on a independent podcast like Strange Times or Dad Pants you know, that sort of thing, it's gloriously uncensored, so one can say exactly what they mean. And if you don't like what people's opinions on it are, well, you can just fucking ignore it.
so what do you think what's the benefit of that? It's an obvious question, I think, but what's the benefit of the list for the listener, like the people that need to hear it? Is the benefit that it's being spoken about at all, or is it the rawness, do you think, that you can get to in a podcast?
A little bit of the rawness, but hopefully demonstrating that this is literally how easy it is to talk about it. So, like, if just one person will listen to it and go, oh, look, it appears to be really easy to talk about this sort of thing. Maybe I'll have a chat with my mate. Maybe I'll have a chat with my mum. And that has happened on a few occasions. So, you know, just spreading the love in it.
Do you find that there's something about doing it on a podcast as well that helps with the way the conversation goes? I've spoken in the past about when you're in a social group or in the real world, I guess, and you're talking to someone, it's easy to be distracted, but a podcast is a bit more focused. I mean, it's rambly and it's all over the place, but there's a bit more focus on that.
Unless you've got Pornhub playing on your second monitor. I can't imagine who would ever do such a thing. But unless you have other distractions, if you're doing a podcast or a podcast, if you're north of Watford in Englandshire, you are pretty focused because, you've got this bloody microphone in front of you and people speaking in your ears.
And it's a bit harder to tune out too. Like, you can't be like, oh.
I mean, obviously, if one's too drunk or stoned, then it can wander off focus, which sometimes has happened on the show.
I was going to ask, have you had podcasts where you've listened back and gone, oh, don't remember that?
Regularly.
Okay.
Yeah. for example, when I record A Strange Times, I'll go back to it the next day just to listen to it and make sure that nothing particularly out of order was said.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll listen back to it and I'll think, oh God, I sound really, really drunk. Whereas at the time, I think I'm perfectly lucid.
Yes.
And proclaim it during the show. And then I listen back to it again, mate, you are anything but sober there, you twat.
It's interesting. I've had conversations with people who, you know, have had a drink through the recording and then apologize afterwards for, you know, oh, I was a bit drunk by the end. And I don't, sometimes you just don't know, notice, luckily.
No.
But they're those podcasts, and it's great to hear you talk about that, especially with the men's health stuff. But here's my question, which is something I've never experienced. How does it feel to be part of a successful podcast with the skewer that you've been doing?
Oh, that's a bit bizarre, actually. Oh. Because I kind of fell into it by mistake.
So this is a question. I've been listening to the skewer. I like it a lot. Some bits I play on regularly just because it's frigging hilarious. I think there was one where Oprah was interviewing. The spliced Oprah's interview with Meghan Markle to a woman talking about the Queen being a lizard. Yeah. Genius. Yeah. Oh, I really enjoyed that. Anyway, so how did you get involved in that? Because with BBC, is it Radio 4?
BBC Radio 4 and on your BBC Sounds app.
That's right. How did you get involved in that? And
the producer, John Holmes, established writer, comedian, generally excellent, funny person. He put a shout out on Twitter for audio creators, and I wasn't following him at the time. The last I'd heard of him was when he replaced Ian Lee on the 11 o'clock show fucking years ago.
Right.
And I don't know who it was. It might be one of our listeners, Dana, actually. It's like quoted me in his tweet, say, "Oi, Davian, have a look at this." And I saw it. It was basically him saying, look, any wacky audio creators and splicers, get in touch. And I didn't really pay that much attention to it. I thought I'd just sent him like a 3-minute edit of something I did on an old episode of The Bit of Sound. And he got back to me saying, oh, yeah, it's really good. Do you want to join a meeting? Back in the days when we had meetings in real life with strangers.
Yeah,
and it was a few years ago. I ended up meeting him and a few other likely lads and some pub in London. And we thrashed out some ideas. And then a couple of weeks later said, look, we can record a pilot for this. It's going to be based on current news, so you can't pre-prepare anything. It's going to be on this date. So a couple of days before, just get yourself all over the news.
Right.
And at very short notice, we cobbled this pilot together. It went down very well with them at the BBC. And, they've been commissioning us ever since. And won all sorts of awards and stuff. No cocaine and hookers yet.
The podcast money. How's the podcast money rolling in, no doubt? Through BBC?
Well, Well, because it's commissioned work,
yeah,
it is paid for, yeah, but it's not a motivating thing.
No.
I'm not going to lie, it's quite nice to get the extra cash injection, yeah, although nice. It's in one hand and out the other.
So has it changed the way you like watch the news? Like, are you constantly watching the news now for when you're in that recording mode? No.
No, not really. I think the only thing it's changed is probably how I behave on public social media now.
Right. Right, because you're working for the BBC.
Not directly for them. I mean, it's this production company that John runs, Unusual Productions, and they're commissioned by the BBC. But yeah, it's all to do with my lifelong mission to be less of a dickhead, really. And this was the perfect excuse.
Right. So how's that going? Or what are the steps to being less of a dickhead? Or more importantly, when were you at your peak dickheadery? If that's a word.
Peak dickheadery would have been about two years into Strange Times.
Right.
Because that was when I was at my heaviest drinking and other things.
Right.
Don't do it so much these days now. And plus these days, it doesn't take a great deal for me to get drunk anyway.
That surprised me that it was that recent. I thought you were, you know, peak dickheadery usually for people in their 20s. And then they sort of mellow out after that. So
but I don't really remember much of my 20s.
Right, fair enough. So what was there a catalyst for a change or some kind of awakening?
Nothing so dramatic, really. Just getting a bit tired of what is essentially a bit of a pretense.
Right.
Because I think, most people who listen to anything that I do know that this is my stage name.
Yes.
And it got to a stage where I was doing more of pretending to be someone than just being myself with a stage name.
Right. And you sort of created this character. I mean, I, for one, didn't know it was a stage name till way later than I should have.
Oh, really?
yeah. Like, I didn't realize until, I think it was Stu again who mentioned it or something like that. And I was like, huh. Never thought of that. But what? So I've lost the train of thought. Sorry. Let me just pause.
And we'll That's right.
Edit that in post.
Happens to me all the time.
So in your quest, makes it sound wankier than it is, but being the character, did it get away from you a bit? Like, oh, I've got license to stretch this character further.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the name was created specifically as a character that hosted the Bitter Sound.
Right.
And then I just kind of got into, I just kind of got used to using the name, really. It's like a level of anonymity. I can never say that word, which is why I always put on a silly voice when I try and say anonymity. I can't say it unless I put on a stupid voice, so I won't bother trying to say it again.
Yeah.
Now it's just a name which I've registered with Equity. Just in case, for when I get voiceover and extras and the odd bit of acting work, then just use that rather than use my real name.
Right. You do voiceover work as well? I mean, you have, as I said, a very good voice.
Yeah, now, thank you. Now and again.
Huh.
Right. Not enough to give up my day job, but,
No. And so what is it? Again, like, what is it like to, you know, get accolades for this show you worked on? I mean, it must be very nice, but, and it's obviously not the reason why it's done, but when did that start to happen for the skewer, I guess?
It was shortly after the first series, or if you're from a third world country, season. shortly after the first series ended, there was some award thingy. I don't actually keep a log of them.
No. I just noticed today, I just thought, I'll look up a few things about it, because I didn't really know the backstory or what your role was. And then I just saw, it's a numerous award winner. And I looked and I was like, it's not just numerous meaning two. That's what I would definitely put, but numerous meaning quite a few. I was like, that's pretty impressive.
Well, I just actually, I just realized that we're in Wikipedia. Audio Production Awards, New York Festival Radio Awards, Best British Podcast, BBC Audio Drama Awards. I don't quite get that.
Is that behind the scenes drama, maybe? I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, we only really ever chat via keyboard and ASCII in a WhatsApp group.
Right.
I mean, like, there's a big group of us that send in audio to John and his engineer, this incredibly talented audio wizard called Tony Chernside.
Yeah.
And between the two of them, they hammer it together, and then Tony puts his magic sheen over the top. And then it goes out. The awards happened, and it's groovy. I mean, it busts your ego a little bit, sure, I'm not going to lie, but it's not important in the grand scheme of things.
No, but it's always nice, isn't it, to get. All right, well, we move away from praising and, you know, talking about all your achievements. So we move away from that. I've got another question from Stu, which again is it's very broad, but when he asked the question, other people were like, that's a great question. So the question is, what, I mean, it sounds like as much of a tourist as we could possibly be as Australians in about London. What was London like in the 80s?
London in the 80s. I didn't, and I don't. Well, certainly not now in COVID times. I rarely went to London anyway, unless I was going to a gig.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I've got nothing to really compare it to, because I've never really travelled as much as I would have liked to. So I've got no real comparison. But what was London like in the 80s on the occasions that I went there? I used to go there, actually. Some weekends I'd go to some of the markets. There'd be like market stalls of all sorts of like gothy clothes and, like dodgy bootleg stalls where you'd buy bootlegs of gigs on cassettes. Remember those kids?
Oh, yeah.
And there's secondhand vinyl shops. There'd be some gigs in the evening, but it's just queuing up in the rain because it's England. And then they're drinking overpriced weak cider.
Yeah.
Probably buying some questionable powder off someone that you met in the toilets and then forgetting it all in the morning.
That sounds pretty nice. So you said you said you haven't traveled as much as you wanted to.
Yeah, I fucking hate flying.
Right.
Which is a bit of a barrier when it comes to being a world traveler. That and the fact I'm a middle-aged married man with kids. So I think possibly when the kids have flown the coop, I might see if her ladyship, Lady Dent, wants to do a little bit of traveling. I've always actually wanted to go on a cruise, on a big cruise ship, but my wife is not up for the idea of that. So,
Right, a cruise ship. A cruise ship is an excellent place for me to really elevate my anxiety, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have a feeling of being not being able to leave for a start. I don't know.
Well, you just get a little bit wet.
Yeah, I would get, you'd get slightly wet. I don't know. There's something about, I'm sure if I went on a cruise, I'd have a great time. No, not in a good way. I'm sure I'd have a great time, but my feeling would be I would have, I don't know what the term for it is, some kind of claustrophobia, but not in an enclosed space. It's not agoraphobia either. It's just this idea of not being able to leave a space.
Entrapment.
Yeah.
Feeling of entrapment.
Yeah.
And,
I think I would not cope too well, but no, a cruise. Yeah. Cruising's that's a little different phrase, but yeah, going on it.
Yeah.
Cruise, let's get my word choice right.
Oh, no, I've done that.
Right. Back to the 80s in London, yeah.
That was more Crawley in the 90s.
Oh, right.
Crawley is a very rundown town near Gatwick Airport in England, which is where I spent my 90s. That's where all the major rock and roll was actually done, the 90s.
Right. In Crawley. Wow, I think I've been through Crawley, so to speak. But
it's not a particularly nice place. But it's where The Cure came from, so it can't be all bad.
No, no. God, I saw The Cure a few years ago. That still playing 3-hour concerts at their age.
Well, they've got a big backlog.
Yeah, but still, I mean, the energy, I guess, is what always impressed me, because especially Robert Smith, you know, he's still got the same kind of hair and still teases it out, and he's very, you know, middle-aged looking, but it's just stunning.
Yeah, I mean, he's a couple of years or so older than me now, I guess. He is beginning to look like a drunk grandmother
now. I think he's very hobbit-like, possibly. I think. He's very hobbit-like, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah. He did go through a little bit of a plumpy phase, but hey, don't we all?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, but that's the best thing about like a really good performer is that all goes away. Once the music starts and the singing starts, you don't sit there going, this concert's good, but he's got to take better care of himself. That's sort of not an issue.
Well, this is one of the benefits of being quite gothy, because you always look like you're at death's door anyway.
That's true, yeah. It's not like he's looking pale today. No, that's how he is. Yeah.
No, that's just how he looks. Yeah.
So I've got another question. You mentioned your kids before.
Is it from Stuart?
No, sadly not. So now this question comes from Alison, who's a big fan of yours. She's been on the show many times. But she said...
Lovely Alison.
She is lovely. What aspect of your youth would you like to subject your kids to? So like a lesser absence of tech or the music or something else from your youth that you think they would have enjoyed or would have benefited from?
Appreciation of music, really. I mean, like, my daughter's really heavily getting into music and stuff now, and is now starting to think about exploring learning an instrument to like express herself and stuff. And my son's not quite of the age to do that.
So if my maths is right, are they what, 16, 14 now? Is that right?
Daughter's recently turned 15. Son's going to be 13 next year.
Right. So is your daughter starting to do the joyful thing of looking back, you know, because my children, you know, all they seem to care about is what music is now, which I was the same. What is happening now? What's the latest music? And the older you get, you tend to start looking back.
Well, she's definitely into the more heavier, darker side of you know, the old rock musics at the moment. What's the band? She got me to get some tickets for a gig next year for this band called Motionless and White. Mm. And they're very shouty and heavy. But she also likes Deftones, which is
okay,
cool.
Yeah. So here's the question. You are taking her to that concert?
I will be chaperoning her, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, she ain't old enough to go on her own.
No, but is she going to make you stand away from her so you don't embarrass her? This is I've got a 13-year-old or nearly a 13-year-old, and that's what I would imagine.
Right. Well, she says she's going to go into the mosh pit.
Right.
And me, with my various surgeries over the past few years, I'm going nowhere fucking near a mosh pit.
I wouldn't go near a mosh pit without surgery.
Oh, Christ, no. So I'm just going to stand at the bar and keep an eye out.
That sounds delightful.
Where my earplugs?
So my daughter's, you know, her taste in music is okay. It's questionable at times, but she likes some things, and I'll lend an ear to it and say, "Oh, I like that." And she likes this Norwegian artist, Girl in Red, at the moment. And
Girl in Red,
yeah.
Funnily enough, that was the last bit of vinyl I purchased.
Oh, lovely, love it. The album. Yeah. So I don't know if I like Girl in Red more than my daughter does, but it's possible, because I was saying to her, look, hopefully next year bands will start to tour. If Girl in Red comes to Australia, I will definitely take you. And she said, okay, but will you stand near me? And I go, well, it depends. If it's a seated concert, I'll have to sit next to you. But that's the age she's at. But she also said, you know, Girl in Red is like, you're a middle-aged man. And I was like, okay. And she's like, most people that like Girl in Red are my age, and many of them are lesbians. And I was like, okay.
Oh, no.
Okay.
That bars me from seeing and enjoying, does it?
That's right. So I had to explain to her that that's not really how music works. And anytime we go, I will take you to concerts, you will see a very wide range of people and very wide range of ages. And it's just, but in her mind, no, it's if like nothing could be more embarrassing than her father enjoying something she enjoys. It's very strange.
Yeah, I can see how they'd think that.
Yeah, I'm sure I did too. Like, ugh. What if you did something? What if you did something embarrassing? Like, I don't know. What if you started singing along? What if you started to do that? You know, if you just started swaying, that's all you needed to do. Really,
you're swaying in the wrong way, Dad.
That's right. Oh no, he was embarrassing. You're such a reactionary. Enjoying the music. Yeah, God. Just sit down. That's what will happen. She'll tell me to sit down and fold my arms, and I'll just have to sit there and take it, I guess. What about for your son? What do you think he could have taken from your era of growing up?
Well, he's definitely inherited my computer geekery.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And in fact, shortly after this wonderful recording, he's been saving up some money, and he wants me to take him to our local street of shops. There's a guy that runs a, funny enough, a shop. It's a computer shop, and he's got like funny enough, lots of computer parts, because my son wants to buy a new graphics card because the one he's got is apparently 6 months old and just doesn't get the right FPS for fucking Minecraft or whatever the hell he's
playing. Right. So it's not just about games. It's about getting the right cards and
oh god yeah there's stuff, right. It's all they bloody talk about, the bloody frames per second. I'm saying, look, you know, what about actual gameplay? Frames per second.
Right. So when you were in that, growing up in the 80s, what were you, you said you were, well, we computer didn't have games. Frames, no, well, we didn't no have frames per second, second. We, kilobytes,
we had frames per minute.
Yeah.
Well, my first home computer, and blimey, this ties in with something current, the death of Sir Clive Sinclair. Because my first home computer was a ZX81.
Wow.
I wasn't quite trendy enough to have a ZX80. I had a ZX81, and I got into me programming BASIC.
Yes.
The old BASIC language, which, of course, you couldn't do a great deal with the, was it 1K or something memory that you got with it. So, we had to save up and buy a 16K RAM pack, the very one that when you plug it in the back, if a chaffinch or a sparrow passes about a mile away, the wind disturbance will jog it enough to crash the entire system.
Well, we had it. We got a Commodore 64, a beautiful Commodore 64 with a tape player. Like that's how you loaded player. The games. Wow. Commodore 64 snobby, was it? Wow, painfully middle-class upbringing.
Well, they were a few years later. I mean, like, that was sort of a proper 8-bit technology with colours.
Yes, mainly blue, but yes, certainly colours at first.
Around the time of the Commodore 64, I had an Acorn Electron, which was like a cut-down budget version of the BBC Micro.
Wow.
Which featured heavily in schools, the old BBC Micro.
Yeah, say that again. It was a BBC Micro.
Yeah, the BBC Micro A and the BBC Micro B.
That's right. We had the Micro Bs. That's what.
And
never knew that's what their full name was.
The most faithful recreations of arcade classics like Defender and Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Although they had to change the name. I think Pac-Man was called Snapper.
Genius. No one made the connection.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they were basically clones of the games. They're very good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't thought of a Micro B. Thank you. For 24 years, I reckon. Very green from memory. They were green and or orange in text, and maybe the newer ones went green.
It was white on black. Isn't it always politics? White on black. Okay.
Got it. No, I got it. Yep, Rivers.
Comedy cul-de-sac there. I'll just back out.
No, it's all good.
Hang on. Where's my reverse lorry reversing sound effect? No, it was white text on black, as far as I remember. I think it depends what mode put the computer in, because there was an actual command line prompt for mode. I think mode 80 put it in high resolution, but it was only monochrome then.
So
God, everyone's falling asleep listening
I'm fine. I've got a couple of people. Nick Maniatis, he's loving it. He's having a great time. Can you remember then, if they were the systems you had, what was the system that you had or that you saw that, like, made you think, wow, I'm in the future? Because I remember the 90s was like, wow, some of these things that came out.
It would have been when I was at school, when we had the BBC Micros, but we also had this proper grown-up computer, which was called, and I remember it now, the RML Z80A.
Wow.
This big clunky keyboard, proper clunky keys that go click-clack.
Yeah.
And a green VDU. Or as the cool kids call them now, monitors. It had a disk drive.
Whoa.
A great big floppy disk drive. That's a floppy disk.
I know. Why did they think that was a great idea to call it a floppy disk?
I don't know, because a lot of geeky people back in those days were mainly virgins that didn't have any idea of sexual connotations.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Wow.
Floppy disk drives. It could hold megabytes of information.
Yeah.
And that's when I got into my programming and stuff, learning assembler and machine code. Fucking hell.
Yeah, and that took you places, no doubt.
Not really, no. It got me my first computer operator job, and I've kind of been loosely involved with computers ever since in my day-to-day job, when I'm being real me.
Yeah, when you be real you, that's a good way to. Who is the real you? That's the last question. No, I'm not actually asking you that question. No, that's a joke. All right, well, I'm going to wrap it up on that scintillating computer talk from me and you and probably Nick. But thank you very much, David. Again, The Skewer is a podcast that you make.
I don't make it.
You don't make it. No, you contribute to it.
I'm part of a lot of. Faces, well, actually not faces, part of a team of names that contribute for the common good of good old-fashioned news satire.
Yeah, it's excellent news satire. I enjoy it. Strange Times as well. What episode are we up to?
Fuck me. We recorded 389 yesterday.
Wow.
So I've got a scan for it today and edit out my ums and ers, put a few comedy censor bleep sound effects in to make it sound like we said something out of order when we didn't.
Well, I don't do it much editing in the ums and ers, so they'll have to stay in, I'm afraid.
That's fine.
Going back, sorry, I'm going all the way back to talking about the bitter sound, and this could be completely off the rails, really, is listening to it and you. People who are interested in listening to some kind of challenging sketches and soundscapes. And I don't know. It reminded me of a book that I read maybe 2 years ago called House of Leaves.
House of Leaves.
Yeah. Mark Danielitsky or something his name is. And it's unsettling, I guess. It's like, how do I put it? So it's unsettling in its tone, and I found the bitter sound as well, enjoyably unsettling at times.
Yeah, that's that's how it's designed.
Yeah, and it, yeah. I'm being a fanboy of the show because I can't quite understand how you do that, how you capture tone. I'm always obsessed with that, with how you actually keep it consistent or where that comes from. Is that something you're interested in things you like, music or art? Oh,
goodness. I don't know. I mean, a lot of it stems from my mental health issues.
Mm.
That kind of dictates a lot of the tone, to be honest.
So your mental health issues shape what you take in as well as produce, you mean? Or
well, they certainly shape the writing, if right. You can call it that.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, again, thank you very much for...
Hey, thank you for having me. It is, again, a pleasure.
Yeah, it's...
we must get your Lily White sweet ass on Strange Time sometime.
Happy to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's strangetimeshow.com.
Anything else to plug, so to speak?
Nothing repeatable, no.
No, okay. All right, thanks, Damien. That's it.
Hey, no worries, mate. Anytime. Take it easy.